This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. You know when you're at a party and someone casually drops a travel finance tip that makes you rethink every trip you've ever booked? That's the energy Smart Travel brings. Except it's backed by serious research and delivered in a way that's actually fun to listen to. They cover topics like which flight deals are actually deals and which are just clickbait, how to get value from your points instead of settling for that tiny reward at checkout, and the smartest ways to book flights without laying that exhausting game of guess the cheapest day. If you care about traveling well and not overspending to do it, this is a show you'll want in your rotation. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
Before you waste time chasing the Southwest Companion Pass, or before you write it off completely because of all the Southwest changes, you need to hear this conversation. Because the Southwest Companion Pass can still be a ridiculous value, but only if you understand the rules, the timing, and how the new Southwest setup changes the game. That's why I brought on Max Craig. Max lives and breathes Southwest strategy, and in this episode, he breaks down the companion pass like a season pass for flying, how you earn it, how long it lasts, how you can change your companion, and what mistakes beginners make that can cost them a full year of benefits. We also talk through what the Southwest updates mean in real life and why, depending on how you travel, the pass can still be one of the best companion fare benefits in the country.
Imagine pursuing your dreams of exploring the world's most exquisite destinations without the extravagant price tag. This is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, hosted by DeAndre Koch, founder of Boldly Go and an expert in financial planning as recognized by Forbes. This podcast is your bridge to a world where travel savvy meets luxury. With DeAndre's unique financial planning perspective, you'll glean insights on making the most of credit card loyalty points and miles for travel that doesn't just move you, but takes you places that you may have never thought possible. Expect the most up-to-date credit card strategies for points and miles, stories from successful professionals on how they integrate travel into their busy lives, and other captivating stories from around the globe. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or just starting out, join us in exploring the best of global travel and learn how to experience nearly free luxury travel around the world yourself. Your journey transforms here, igniting our revolution in the world of travel.
Welcome to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. I am your host, DeAndre Koch. I've got another fantastic guest for all of you all today. But before I introduce him, a couple quick reminders. First off, don't forget if you are watching this on YouTube and you're not on our audio platforms, you're missing out on about half the show because every Friday we release our quick hits. That is our up-to-date news in the world of points and miles and travel, and usually news that has just dropped within the last few days or the last week. So you're going to want to catch that. That's on the Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you catch the RSS feed or the audio version of the podcast. And of course, for those that are listening to this on one of those platforms, you can watch the full version of this on our YouTube channel as well. And don't forget, we also have our vlog style, travel style YouTube channel, Boldly Go Travels, as well. And one of the things I love about Apple Podcasts is now you actually can skip ahead. It has automatic chapters in there. So if you want to jump ahead or jump back to anything that our amazing guest has for you today, well, then you have absolutely the ability to do so. Now, I've got to introduce an incredible guest who is an expert in all things Southwest. His name is Max Craig, and he actually spoke at Chicago seminars last year, and that's what's now the Chicago Points Festival. I will actually be there this coming year, so I'm excited. Max, hopefully if you're there as well, we're going to get a chance to meet in person. But Max is a Southwest specialist, and while there's been so many changes in the last few months, or last year, I should say, when it comes to Southwest, he's still on the Southwest train and still educating people on why Southwest is valuable and viable. And we're here to get that information. So Max, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, Max. Before we jump in and start unpacking this world of Southwest, where are you? where do you live, I should say. What do you do for a living, and how'd you get into this whole world of points and miles?
So the where do I live and where am I are two different questions at the moment. We actually live in Nashville now. I'm actually in Kenosha County, Wisconsin at the moment, which is right between Milwaukee and Chicago. That's where I grew up. We're up here visiting family for the weekend. And that's part of the reason, kind of how I got into Southwest. I was living in between two, I would say, major footprints of Chicago. And then once AirTran kind of went away, is it Southwest kind of moved into the Milwaukee market a lot harder. And that's really where I would say I got my chops of learning Southwest and kind of playing that game. As far as what I do, I work in tech industry. And I used to live on planes 40 weeks a year, traveling Monday through Thursday, staying in hotels 100, 120 nights a year, flying 100, 120 times a year. And I would say about 75% of that was Southwest back when I was running that kind of schedule. Nowadays, it's more single night and two night type of trips, but still fly in the 40 to 50 range typically in a year. So that's kind of how I learned this stuff, is really flying in the seat. I said a lot of times I didn't necessarily need to play the credit card game because I was getting enough points and miles from my own time in the chair, if you will.
Got it. Okay, so we have some background. We are in a major, or close to a couple major Southwest hubs. We're definitely on the Chicago side. And then, as you said, Milwaukee has a much bigger footprint as well. Been to Milwaukee many, many times. And I understand that. I mean, Southwest is, that's kind of one of the better airlines to fly going into Milwaukee, although I always still prioritize American to do so. So let's start talking through a little bit about Southwest, because obviously we have a lot of different levels when it comes to our listeners for the show. And what I mean by that is we have plenty of people that have been in Points and Miles for years and years and years. And we have some people where this might be their very, very first episode when it comes to hearing anything about Points and Miles and everything in between. So I want to start with a really kind of 101 level, because this is something that you hear about as you get more into Points and Miles, but I think you're hearing about it a lot less now because of all the changes. So for someone totally brand new, Max, what is the Southwest Companion Pass in kind of plain English?
Plain English is you buy a flight either on cash or on miles and you get a plus one to come with you. It's really as simple as that, and it's unlimited. So say you earn a pass, like there's people, we're recording this early 2026, there's people earning their pass right now. And the rule for Southwest is that you get the pass for the remainder of the year you earn it, plus the entire following year. So if you earn that in say February of 26, you would have 23 months all the way through December of 2027 to have that plus one come with you. So whether you take two or three flights a year, you take 20 or 30, is that you get that plus one to come with you for just the price of taxes and fees. So that's where I would say it's still a major differentiator between some of the other, what I would call companion type tickets, is that those are usually one use. You can, on some of the carriers, you can earn what I would say a bonus one with particular spend or particular activities. But Southwest is truly unlimited. As many flights as the primary pass holder takes, is that the companion can come with them as well.
Now, with this companion pass, is it completely free or are there additional expenses, taxes, and fees? How does that actually work in reality? Because I mean, I think that was a great explanation of the general gist. Okay, if I qualify for it this year and it's February 2026, if I qualify for it right now, I'm going to have a companion pass all the way through the rest of this year and all the way through the rest of 2027. But how free is free?
It domestically is the easy answer, and it's $560 per flight. So really, Southwest has to pay the TSA fee to the government to handle that. So that's not part of the quote-unquote free. That's a pass-through kind of what I would say charge. So that everything about the flight, the landing fees, all of that is incorporated in the companion pass fare. It's just that $560 fee each way, so $1,120 round trip. For international, it's a little more complicated, but again, it's a pass-through expense. So if you go to what I call the beach destinations that Southwest goes to that are out of the country, you have to pay that country's landing fees and taxes. So those can be more significant. So say you go to Jamaica, you go to Mexico, those can be, say, in the $100, $150 range. But that is, again, that's not basically a fee that Southwest is getting. That's a fee that is a pass-through to the government entity. Is that we have different rules here in the U.S., is that some of the taxes aren't charged on quote unquote award tickets, where other countries obviously aren't honoring that kind of thing. So it doesn't matter if you're on a free ticket or a paid ticket, you have to pay those fees. So that's kind of the difference. But yeah, domestically, it's super cheap and there's no limitation. If the flight is $500, it's included. If it's $100, it's included.
No, I think it's really great that you create a little bit of delineation between the companion pass and the companion certificates, because I'm not personally familiar with all of the airlines' companion certificates, but I am familiar with American Airlines since I fly them so much and have their cards. Their companion certificate, basically, once you get it, it costs you around $90 or $99 to use that certificate for a flight. And as you mentioned, it's a one-time deal. So when you hear about a American credit card, like the new Globe MasterCard that gets you automatically on every anniversary, you get a companion certificate, that's a one-time use certificate, whereas it's very different from this pass, which is truly almost like a season pass for flying for whoever you name. And that's probably a great way to put it, correct?
Absolutely. And that's actually part of what I wanted to bring up later today, as far as creative uses to use it. But I do think of it like a season pass, like what you would use for me. I'm a skier. Is it doesn't matter if you go 10 days a year or you go 100 days a year, right? That's your fixed cost. That's very similar with the pass, other than that TSA charge and some of those taxes and landing fees. So that's where it's truly different. And Alaska's companion certificate is very similar. Even some of the Delta ones are like that as well. And sometimes those can be challenging to use too. You got to find ones that fit the criteria and has the award space. It's very similar to trying to find Saver award space sometimes. It's got to be available on the flight to be able to use it. And Southwest rule is if there's a seat open on the plane, you can have it as your companion ticket.
Now, I know we're going to talk a little bit about some of the mistakes people make when trying to go after it and such, but can you give us some idea on how flexible is this? If you are the Southwest, expert here, you get a companion pass, you say, hey, DeAndre, let's go take this trip. And then tomorrow you want it to be someone else. And then the next day you want it to be someone else. Is anyone technically my companion? Can I just basically buy a flight for anyone now for the rest of this year, next year?
With limitations, right? So you do get to designate your companion when you first earn it. So that's called your initial designation. And then you get 3 changes per year. So that's one of the classic examples that I generally share, is that my wife, my player two, right, is my companion 90% of the year. But she's not a skier. Is that when I do go on a ski trip, I will change my companion away from her to a buddy, and we'll go out west and we'll go skiing. And then when I come back, I will change it back to her. So you do get some flexibility. It's 3 changes. It's not 3 people. So you can't just pick 3 people and switch back and forth as you will. So there is a rule, and I'll call this out, is that you basically can't have 2 companions booked at any one time. But here's the tip. It doesn't have to be the right companion. So in the example that I just shared, is that I will book my wife to a ski trip to hold the seat. And then when I take the last flight with her before that trip, then I will call Southwest and say, hey, I want to designate my buddy as my companion. And basically, while you're at it, switch that upcoming trip to him as well. So you don't always have to, quote unquote, use your points or buy some kind of refundable fare to hold that placeholder for a companion you can't necessarily switch to yet. You can just book your current companion to that trip, and you can swap it out later to basically have that availability on the flight.
I think that's a fantastic strategy and really nuanced and a great idea for someone that is trying to figure out how to navigate this world and making sure that where they use their companion pass the way they want to, but they have the flexibility to change, especially if, as you said, they might want to bring their spouse, their P2 for one trip, and then maybe a family member for another one. How do you navigate that? So that's fantastic. I'm curious, Max, for the diehard Southwest lovers, at least for years, the chasing the companion pass was an annual game, basically, right? There's a strategy behind how to do it, and people are in the weeds with making sure they're never without that companion pass as best as they can control. I'm curious, is this something that kind of once you start going for it, you really need to stick with it? Or do you think that is something that someone can kind of do more as a one and done strategy? Or again, is it more of a long-term play?
It is. I would say it's both. One of my things that I do when I do webinars is I say you do you, right? So there's some people that it would be super valuable for them to have it for say a year or say the 23 month example that we just shared. And others want to keep it in perpetuity, right? And it really depends on your travel patterns. One thing that I like to position as why you should probably keep it long term is repositioning, right? Is some people say, oh, I'm kind of burned out on the Southwest, like beach destinations. Is I want to go to other ones. I want to go to Europe, et cetera. And it's depending on the market that you're in and how, I would say, good of coverage Southwest has on that. It's a great tool to reposition. So even though we live in Nashville, is that there are some international options there, but they're often not very, what I'll call advantageous on points, right? So we still do reposition up to Chicago. We have family here. That's where I am right now. Is that that gives us the flexibility to basically get those usually better award space availability from O'Hare versus what we have in Nashville. So for those of you that don't necessarily take a lot of Southwest, I would say centric trips, it doesn't mean that you can't get basically value out of the pass. So it really depends on what I would say you and your personal preferences. But I think that when, as long as Southwest isn't inconvenient for you to use, I think it makes sense. And I talk a lot on my page about basically like, say, doing the two-card method and getting it for that up to 23, 24 months. But then you also have that in-between year because there's a rule with Southwest that you can't apply for those same credit cards again for 24 months since you last got the bonus. So it's really, for most of the bonuses, they're 90 days. So that's really a 27-month shift. So if you're trying to do it every 2 years, you're off. You have some gaps there. So if you can do that third card that's available in a slot in that in-between year and attain it, is that you can basically keep it going in perpetuity. And I actually have a webinar on that about long-term strategies. And that's one of them, is a cycle through the cards very, what I would say, intentionally. And the other option is to switch players. So when it doesn't matter, we're a little different because I'm the one that travels for work, is that I always kind of keep the pass. But for those of you that do have a player too, and it really doesn't matter who's the pass holder and who's basically the companion, is that then you don't have to, I would say, dance around the 24-month rule very much because you can just switch people. Is every 2 years, you just have the opposite person do it. And then that person can pursue transferable points or directly with some of the airlines in those off years. So there's a way to keep it going. And there's even a way, I have a bunch of families that follow me on the page, is that they keep two going at a time. And to me, the best way to do that is one does two cards and basically gets it for a period. And then the next year, the other one does. So you're never trying to do, say, four cards in a consolidated point in time, because that can run into difficulties with kind of some of the bank's rules and things like that.
I love that and the usefulness of those different strategies. I'm curious then, Max, outside of some of the things you already mentioned, which I think have been pretty creative, do you have any other like lesser known ways to use the companion pass or some other creative strategies that you think would be good for our listeners to know about while we're on this subject?
Absolutely. So far we've really focused on what I would call the real pass, the full pass, the one that's good for up, usually in the 12 to say 23 month range. They also do a ton of promos. So like they actually just got done with one where if you take a particular number of flights, and this time it was just one round trip in a defined date boundary, that you earn a companion pass for, I think it was like 2 months, like starting in, I think it's like September and October. Is that those can be great to get people that can't have credit cards a pass. So say you're a family of four and you have one companion pass, is that if you go somewhere during that time, is that you basically on, and this one counted for both point fares and for cash, is that basically those children are earning a companion pass as well for that duration. So say you travel as a family of four, you paid for three tickets, that means for the next one, is that you would have two more guests to bring. Is that you could go during that fall time period, you could take six people for the price of three. No spending requirement, no new credit cards, and especially if you were gonna take a trip anyways, is that it's a huge way, and how some of the folks use that is they let their child bring a friend or bring their cousin or you bring grandma with. Is that there's ways to do it where you can get those free flights without having to do, say, a two-card method and working like that, where you have a pass for a long duration, is you can do it for, say, specific trips. So that's a creative way to get what I would say people that otherwise wouldn't qualify or couldn't qualify. They don't fly enough, or they don't fly enough on revenue fares or whatever it is, but you can earn them a pass through some of these, I would say, limited time promos where you can get that benefit, especially to extend to others. And a great example of that is kind of that family trip that when you get buy one, get one for multiple people on the same trip, that can really make things more affordable for a lot of folks.
You've heard me talk about Bill as the loyalty program that lets you earn points on rent wherever you live. And they just leveled up even more. As of 2026, homeowners can also earn up to 1.25x points on their mortgage payments. This is thanks to Bilt's three new credit cards, the Palladium card, Obsidian card, and Blue card. All three turn your housing payments, rent or mortgage, into flexible rewards, so you can choose the card that fits your lifestyle without missing out on points and exclusive benefits. Bilt points can be redeemed at top airlines and hotels, Amazon.com purchases, future rent payments, and even more. Bilt points have also been ranked by top publications as the industry's most valuable points currency. Your housing payment is already your biggest expense. Make it your most rewarding. Find the card that fits your lifestyle and apply today at joinbilt.com/journey. That is joinbilt.com/journey. Make sure to use our URL so they know that we sent you. Terms and limitations apply. Subject to approval and eligibility, Bilt cards are issued by Column NA, member FDIC, pursuant to license for MasterCard International Incorporated.
Hey everyone, quick break from the episode. If you're enjoying the show, make sure you're subscribed on whatever platform you're listening on so you never miss an episode. And if you've gotten any value so far, it would mean the world if you left a quick rating or review. It helps more people discover the show and keeps us motivated to keep creating great content. Also, if you're feeling stuck or want help with points and miles, whether it's picking your first card, planning a big redemption, or even having someone book it all for you, we've got you covered. There's a link in the show notes to schedule a free points and miles consultation. Just fill out a quick questionnaire, tell us your goals, and we'll take it from there. And don't forget, our newsletter and private Facebook group are great ways to stay on top of breaking news, updated card offers, and tips that don't always make it into the podcast. You'll find those links in the show notes as well. Now, back to the episode.
Well, I'm curious, Max, when it comes to, just to clarify, when it comes to the use of the companion pass, you said round trip. Does that matter in the amount of segments of the round trip? For instance, if when I travel to Milwaukee, for instance, if I use Southwest, I'm connecting through BWI in Baltimore before continuing on to Milwaukee. Because I'm now flying with the layover, is it still going to be just that $5.60 fee, or is there anything more because of that, or is it not as useful because I do have a layover?
So it is the same in most cases. So the one case that is, I'll call it the exception, and doesn't happen too often, is that if it is more than a 4-hour connection, they presume that you have the time to leave the airport and come back in and reprocess through TSA. So those longer than 4-hour connections is that sometimes you do have to pay the $5.60 twice, but most Southwest flights, especially if you're connecting in BWI, probably don't have a layover that eclipses that. And then in Hawaii and Alaska, I believe it's 12 or something like that. There's a lot, I'd have to look that up, but you get more of a cushion there. But yeah, that's generally the rule. But yeah, if you take 2 or 3 segments to say get to Hawaii, is that you're usually fine and still paying the $5.60 each way. The one challenge where that comes in and throws a little bit of a monkey wrench into the situation, and we'll talk about that a little later, is assigned seats, because that is per person per segment.
Got it. No, that's super helpful. So Max, we've talked a little bit about the timing and how if you get it, you know, here in February, when we're recording this, at least 2026, we have all the way till the end December of 2027. how can someone be really effective with the timing of earning it? Because is it super reasonable for someone to, yes, try in January and get it by February? Should they be starting in November or December to so that it triggers in January? Like, how do you play the timing game most effectively? What do you recommend there?
So generally, I recommend starting late in the year. But I'm going to preface that a little bit. We're recording this in February. That doesn't mean it's too late, right? So even if you start now, you could have a pass going by April and still have it going for, say, 20 months, right? You're not too late. To me, until you're more than, say, halfway through the year, you're not too late, right? Because you do want to get that 24-month clock going, because basically the longer you wait, the longer you have to wait to do it again, right? So that timing of applying late in the year can be, I would say, most strategic, because you can basically get those sign-up card bonuses right away in January. But most people will say they'll do one in the November, December timeframe and do the next one, say, a month later. That way you stagger your card applications. That way you have time to work through the minimum spends for those cards, and you're still going to get it, say, this time of year, right? So that's the advantageous way to do it. But having said that, people misfire. Is that they spend too fast, too early. And if that bonus comes in December, you're torched.
Got it.
Because then you either qualify in December and you would get it through all of 2026. So you really cost yourself a year. And even worse, if you did one card and you're planning on doing two, you get no pass at all. You have the points to spend, but you're not going to end up with a pass because you didn't get to the 135K points that you need. So that, what I would say, is the silver lining of doing this kind of podcast early in the year. It's not a factor. You get the card, go. Like, there's no, like, I always tell people, like, spend, like, leave $500 worth of room. Don't get anywhere close, because just one kind of auto renewal thing on your cable bill or whatever to put you over, is that we don't need to worry about that when we're talking about doing it at the beginning of the year. Is it basically go prepay some bills, pay off your auto insurance, whatever it is that sometimes hits a lot of people early in the year, is go. You can't prematurely kind of attain your points. So to me, it's actually, I would say, a more straightforward path to do it, to start right away in the new year, is that you don't need to be as diligent about timing things and kind of making sure all your ducks are in a row, if you will.
No, I love that breakdown and explaining why, because I've heard many times horror stories of people that they were trying to play the companion pass game and the perfect one, which is basically making sure that you get it starting in January of a year. So you got your cards back in November, December timeframe. But again, they forgot about something that dinged on the 30th of the year. And, you know, they got, basically, they qualified in that December, as you mentioned, and so they lost an entire year, which I've never tried that. I've never done anything in the Southwest or Companion Pass world, but I can imagine how gut-wrenching that would be to know that, you know, you try to perfectly time this and, you know, you end up losing 12 months as opposed to just having an extra 12 months or 11 months at least to do it.
Yeah, and that's the, I would say, heart-wrenching part of it, right? Is that that doesn't matter as far as resetting a 24-month clock. Right. So not only do you not get the pass for as long a duration, you still have to wait the same quote unquote cooldown period as everybody else. So you're kind of restricted to do it. There's ways to recover from it, usually by switching players and things like that. But it does mess up your mojo of trying to keep it perpetual when you misfire like that.
Got it. Max, I know we can't talk about Southwest without talking about all their changes they've had. So I want to get to that. But before we do, I want to stay on the Companion Pass a little bit longer and just ask, who is it best for, do you think? With your insights, I mean, who should be really going after the Companion Pass? Who is that ideal Companion Pass user today with all the changes that Southwest has made?
I think the ideal user is someone who does take a few trips a year and lives in a market with decent footprint of Southwest, right? So if it's inconvenient for you to use Southwest, you're always connecting somewhere else, and you might have to sit at that airport for, say, north of 2-3 hours, is then you got to, I would say, balance your, what I would say, cost to time ratio, right? Especially for those that are still, say, in their working career where your PTO days are limited, you don't want every travel day to always be a whole travel day. Like, say you take an 8 a.m. flight, if you can basically make it by mid-afternoon and grab a drink and go out for dinner and actually enjoy the travel day, maybe get a couple of ski runs in, get a couple of turns in, that's fantastic, right? But if everything from your, I would say, origination point is kind of, I would say, methodical and it's going to take all day and you're going to have downtime, then maybe it's not for you and maybe you should pursue other programs with some of the other domestic carriers or transferable points or things like that. But I think that ideal customer is a pretty wide net. Is it Southwest does have reasonable footprints in a lot of airports and actually in some what I would call underserved locations too for some of the other major carriers, right? Is that I actually went to college in Madison, Wisconsin. It's actually not a very good airport, right? Because really the only places you can get from that airport are usually the other airlines hubs, right? Southwest actually isn't even there, right? Is it O'Hare and Milwaukee are both basically 90 minutes, 2 hours away? Is that sometimes that's what all you're doing? Is that you're flying from Madison to Chicago, or you're flying from Madison to Minneapolis to go on? If you have to do that kind of thing to make Southwest work for you, then it's probably not a fit. But for a lot of people, though, it is, right? Is that you can get a fair amount of locations. Southwest does have what I would call the mountain locations. Like you can get to Denver, you can get to kind of Montrose and things like that. Now they actually have a Nashville to Montrose direct flight, which is fantastic. That's relatively recent news. Actually, it starts literally a month from now. They announced it a few months back, but it starts in March. And they're also going to be doing one to Steamboat. So some of those mountain vacations, some of those beach vacations are really good, even if you do have to connect in, say, Dallas or Nashville to make that work, is that that's oftentimes better is because the other majors are making you connect in locations to get some of those ski destinations as well. So it's a pretty wide net, but most people can work it. But if it doesn't work for you, that's okay too.
I'm going to try to throw you a little bit of a curveball here because I think you did a great job explaining who it's great for and who it's not good for. But I'm going to convert my question a little bit and change it up and say who that was probably chasing it before likely does it not make sense to chase anymore. And that's probably less about the changes to the companion pass, perhaps, I'm guessing this is an assumption, and more so the changes to Southwest, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. But do you think there is a person that likely was chasing it that likely either because of Southwest changes or lifestyle-wise, it may not make sense for anymore?
I think that's really limited. I think some of the people, I would say the biggest use case that I can think of is the person that's quote unquote burned all the Southwest locations. Like say they're not a skier and they don't go every year, is that they've done the beach vacations, is that people that want more, is that they want to go to Europe, they want to go to Asia, and they don't need to reposition. So then the value proposition isn't there, right? So if you're already in a location, if you're already near JFK, if you're already near Boston, you're already near, say, Chicago, LA, San Francisco, where you can get to a lot of international destinations, what I would say organically, then the repositioning doesn't make as much sense. And if you've already been in Hawaii five times, you've already been to Cancun five times, like then I would say it's a, what do you want to call it? Decreasing kind of value because you want to go elsewhere, right? So it's like really a question more about your personal preferences of what are your bucket list trips. And does Southwest help you get there? And for some people, that answer is no. And that's okay, right? Even in my career, as I've shifted around, when I was up here, is I always tried to keep basically Southwest in United status. And then after I had United status, I found out that that doesn't really mean much in O'Hare because everybody has it, right? So then I started doing American because less people had American status in Chicago because United is so dominant here. Right. So you adapt as you go. And I think for those of you that have had a companion pass for, say, 3-5 years in a row, is that maybe you do want to give it a couple years off and come back to it later. That's totally fine, too. And then others want to keep it forever. And there's ways to make that happen as well.
I love, Max, that you gave me the opportunity to throw in some financial planning phrasing because, you know, I always got to kind of weave in the financial advisor role into these conversations. And really, we're not talking anything that's relative to analytics or anything like that much. But you said decreasing value. And in the financial planning world, it's the law of diminishing returns, we call it. So super nerdy, throwing that out there that we got a little bit of a tie and a little segue there. So you gave me a chance to throw that out there.
No, absolutely. And that's really perfect term for it, right? Is like you do more of the same thing is you don't get as much value out of it. That's a perfect example.
Max, of course, now got to transition a little bit, talk about all the changes that Southwest has laid out. And last year we had a great episode where we talked through these upcoming changes that were happening and that were announced, and that kind of, I think, blew up their fan base and their loyalty base and their marketing and everything else. Now we're actually in it. So can you talk through what has changed and how is that impacting your Southwest experience, even as someone that's still very loyal to the brand and the experience?
Yeah, so it just went into effect about 10 days ago. So really, I've only flown a couple times since the changes have taken effect. I'm kind of, I would say, a little different, as I've always been in Group 1 or Group 2 because of status, is that really the system is very similar to what the other majors have been doing for years and years and years. I mean, even when it comes to things like baggage fees and things like that, as all the other airlines have been doing that for about a decade, is where you do need to keep at least that basic, say, around $100 card to have that first bag kind of free. And Southwest is really aligning to that kind of model. So I would say that that's kind of a push. There's been some growing pains, though, of how they're doing what I would say the overhead bin storage and things like that, is that it seems how they're doing the boarding groups isn't necessarily as logical as it probably should be, because those first few rows, especially that very first row, right, has to put their stuff above in the overhead compartment, right? So some of those people are ending up in group two, especially if they're on the aisle. So those first three rows, it seems like some of those people are getting group one, some are getting group two. The ALPs could go either way. The A-list people might always be a two. It varies, but I think that they'll work through that kind of thing. And we've already seen some changes reported in some of the data points. Flight attendants closing those bins, similar to what you'd have on, say, a business class experience domestically, is basically prove that you're sitting here, then I'll open it for you and help you get it up there kind of thing, is that they're already starting to adapt and make those kind of changes. I think it's a learning curve for everybody. So I think that not only the flyers are having anxiety, especially if you don't fly any other airlines a lot, is it like, oh, how does this work? Because they're just so used to open boarding. Like, I'll just pick wherever there's a spot. Is that it's different now. You got to pay attention to your boarding pass. You got to look where you really should be kind of thing. So I think it's just that learning curve and that adaptation. But my experience on the first few that I've flown, it's not anything alarming. It's just, I think people got to get used to it.
So as you mentioned, it's not really different than what the experience is for flying American or flying Delta. My question for you, Max, is do you feel like the companion pass is less valuable or has been devalued due to the other changes, these other changes that Southwest has made, like having to pay for baggage and other things?
I don't think so. And this is really why, is that the credit cards come with the benefits. So you don't necessarily need to have A-list or A-list preferred to get a free bag. And you don't need it to actually have to pay for assigned seats. So really all of the cards come with basically some kind of privilege for seats, and they all come with a bag, basically allowance. And the allowance isn't just for the traveler. So the allowance is for the traveler plus up to 8 on their reservation, so 9 people, plus their companion. So really 10 people get unlimited number of trips, but one bag per trip, right? So if you do, say, travel a family of 4 and the bag fees would be $35 each, that's $140 per direction for bag fees. But you can pay $99 for a card and have that unlimited. So whether you take one trip a year, you take 13, you would get that bag fee waived for the single bag for all of those trips. So really, to me, what they did is they made it where we all talk about kind of churning the credit cards and doing it every 24 months, getting the companion pass renewed, is that you always want somebody in your household to keep and maintain a card. Whether you switch back and forth between player one and player two, that's totally fine. But to me, somebody wants to keep the card for not only for those bag benefits, but also to have the seating benefits. And one thing to call out is those two, of course, they're the most expensive cards, do have the seat selection benefits at the time of booking. And that is the same. It's for everybody in your reservation up to 8 plus your companion. So to be able to have that comfort where it's not a free-for-all at 48 hours before flight, you got to go pick and say you're trying to keep a family of 5 together. Like, you can have that card. You're going to pay a little extra, of course, but you're going to have that unlimited seating benefit at the time of booking. So you know where you are. You know that you got one bag allowance for everybody for basically that single annual fee. And it can be a little stiff on the annual fee on the surface. But the reality, when you think about what you're getting in return for that, is you're not paying the $35 per person per direction. And you're also not paying, say, those seat fees can be anywhere from like $20 up to like some of the ones to Hawaii are like over 100 for seat fees per person per direction. So really, to me, it's a no-brainer to get and keep the cards. And typically, I would say most people do want to keep one of the higher annual fee ones for that reason.
Perfect, Max. This has been fantastic. Before we wrap this up, since we are talking about cards, I know you just said essentially there's great value in that most expensive card. They do have multiple cards. Do you feel like everyone, because of that, should just go for that card? Or do you recommend something else for the general, the person that's their brand new beginner, and it's like, hey, well, which of these three cards do I need to do to start this strategy to get the companion pass? What's your general answer for that? Is it just go for the best one or something different?
I would say go for the best personal one for most people, right? So there's actually a promo going on right now where the best personal one is also the one that has the most sign-up bonus as well. And it includes a temporary companion pass. That offer a lot of times does come around this time of year. Is that card, especially for a beginner, because the beginner is not going to have status, right? They're not going to have those entitlements somewhere else. So to me, the differentiator is, do you have status or will you get it soon kind of thing? Then maybe the cheaper card's just fine because you do get seating benefits and things like that and bag benefits from having status. Is that if you don't have status and you are what I would say more of the vacation type traveler, is that higher annual fee personal card is going to give you those benefits without you, what I would say, people always say, oh, they're just trying to nickel and dime us to death. And to me, all the other airlines, again, have been doing that for a while, where if you do want to pay a la carte, you have to pay a la carte. But if you do want to keep those annual fee cards, as some of those also include the seating benefits and things like that. So for that starter person, I think that highest card is the way to go. And of course, it is the highest fee. But as long as you're going to travel at least a couple times a year, or even if you do one trip a year, but it is, say, two or more people, the math is still there. And it also includes anniversary points. So the anniversary points usually pay for around half of that fee. So for that highest card, you're usually getting around $100 worth of that fee back, and the fee is $229. So you really have to eclipse, say, that $130, and that's really just one trip of bag fees, one direction of one trip in bag fees.
Awesome. Max, fantastic points you've been making here. Before wrapping up, I know I just said that just a couple minutes ago, but you keep giving me more information, which keeps prompting more questions. Are there any other mistakes that you really feel like beginners make that you want them to know how to avoid? And yeah, what are they?
Yeah, so one probably dovetails into kind of what we were just talking about, and that is card selection, right? So there's a federal law about basically banks changing the terms of credits on us within the first year. So really the banks kind of treat that is that if I can't change the credit terms that I'm extending by getting a new credit card, then we have to keep the card we applied for a year. So if you do apply for one of those lower credit cards and say 3 months later, as you go to book a trip and you don't get that advanced seat selection benefit and you know that the better card does have that, you got 9 more months to wait to be able to switch. So I think that's one thing is it's like, I don't want to pay the higher annual fee card because I don't like annual fees. Is that make sure you do the math, whether the fees are going to be worth it. And like I said, if you do at least a trip a year, that annual fee is probably worth it. Is that I would say that's one of the bigger things that I see is that's something we can't recover, right? The answer to that sometimes is to be deliberate and potentially pivot to a business card that has that kind of benefit. But of course, the business card that has that benefit also has a higher annual fee as well. And then you can't cancel the first one. So you end up basically with two cards with annual fee, one at the higher level and one at the lower level. So that's one thing is be very intentional about your card progression and making sure you think about the long term. And the other to kind of back up into, I would say, a mistake in the people who do apply late in the year for cards is that it could be player two has the card saved to their mobile wallet and they use tap to pay and they buy new tires for the car with it or something that can basically eclipse a minimum sign-up bonus very fast. So one of the things to do is be very intentional about your spend when you are doing that. For those that are listening to this
early in the year, that's not really a factor. But for those of you that are doing that long-term strategy of like, hey, I'm going to apply at the end of the year and I'm going to apply in 26 for 27 and 28, is just to be aware that there is a proper sequence and I'd say a risk mitigation strategy around your spending progression.
Perfect, Max. You brought a lot of value today, a lot of in-depth and strategic and usable information when it comes to Southwest and the Companion Pass specifically. I know you mentioned you have a webinar. Can you go ahead and plug all the things? How can someone connect with you if they have questions on the Southwest or anything like that? How can they connect with you best?
Absolutely. So most of my effort goes to my Optimize Southwest page, and that's on Facebook. So if you search for Optimize Southwest, you will find me. If you search for my creator account, it's called Max Craig, M-A-X-C-R-A-I-G. As you'll find that creator account, give that a follow. So I post those as events in Facebook. I do host them on my webinar platform, but I announce the events on Facebook. Those that are on my email list, is basically you can sign up on pointstothemax.com. Max, M-A-X, is that there's a sign-up form at the bottom of that screen. I mean, you'll get the email invites and things like that. Is that those are the main places to find me. I'm starting to work more on my Instagram channel. That's still just getting going. That was one of my goals for this year, is to build that up more. But those are the main places to find me today. And that's where you'll see those webinars and some of those live events that I do that are free. Really, my content and my webinars are free.
Well, awesome, Max. The listeners can absolutely connect with you in all those different places and make sure that they're continuously getting more value from Southwest. I will go ahead and throw out one other place they can connect with you as well, because I know that you are in our WhatsApp community chat, and that's a place that it's a great community, great conversation in there. So anyone listening to the show, you can get to there by subscribing to our newsletter or joining our Facebook group. The access is in there, but you can directly communicate and chat with Max and ask questions. Max has been fantastic in the group as well. So Max, appreciate you being in there, but more importantly, appreciate you coming on the show today. And thank you so much for being here.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. I hope you enjoyed it.
Absolutely did. I have to follow up with two questions we ask everyone before wrapping these up. The first is just to make sure, are there any final thoughts at all? Anything that you think we missed or anything else you think would be good for the listeners to know?
I would say a few things, right? Get involved local. If you do have a local Points and Miles group, is get involved. In Nashville, we have one called Music City Points and Miles, is that we generally try to meet up in a live event like once per month and meet other people that are in the hobby. And generally, those groups are open to people in any kind of, what I would say, any point in their journey, right? From beginners to people that really do points and miles and cashback and things like that, basically full time. Right, is that there's all that evolution. And then consider coming to a live event, right? So put a little plug in. I'll be speaking at Frequent Traveler University in May in Dallas. And then Chicago is not necessarily all planned out yet, but hopefully I get on the speaker docket again in Chicago in the fall. So there's lots of opportunities to meet people in the points and miles space. And I think even if it's not something that necessarily that you'll do, knowing that you're aware of other plays and other opportunities out there, I think is good for your learning path.
I love that idea, the community side. I've had people in our local area say that I need to start something up in our local community here in the Virginia Beach, Norfolk area. So that might just inspire me to just go ahead and pull the trigger and add it to the list of things on my plate to do. But I love that idea.
Yeah, we just like pick a bar and we try to pick like a resi place, right? A place that we can burn our resi credits or something like that. And it's pretty informal. We go to a brew pub and sit around a table. Sometimes the whole group is in a conversation. By the end, there's little groups of like four or five people chit-chatting about different plays. It's a good way to find your people. And the same thing as we have a WhatsApp channel that is for the local folks is that it helps understand the plays that might be available. Like we're in the Kroger zone, so a lot of us play the Fuel Points game and things like that, but that's a very regional thing, right? That's not as available in some of the other parts of the country, but you probably have different plays at the grocery store chains that are elsewhere.
I love that. It's a fantastic idea. Last question, Max. Who else should we have on the show that you think could bring additional value to our listeners, just like you did?
I think Patrick Sugarman. So he runs the points page. He's fantastic. He knows the gold buying and reselling game. He plays that. And actually, I think he might be speaking at that at Frequent Traveler in Dallas. And he's also really good with travel insurance. So he is a licensed insurance agent. And he does have travel insurance, and he does also, he's done in Chicago, right? And I think he might be doing that in FTU as well, is one about travel insurance and how to protect yourself, especially when you're taking those international trips where if something doesn't go right and you're late, you miss your trip, you miss your cruise, whatever, is to help talk through how you can protect yourself by having the right insurance stuff in place.
I love that. That sounds like someone very unique and interesting to bring on the show. So we'll absolutely look to connect with him. Again, Max, thank you so much for being on the show today. Really appreciate your time. It's been fantastic having you.
Awesome. Cheers. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And for the listeners, make sure to connect with Max when you get a chance, as well as to follow us and the show on all the social media platforms. Of course, we link to everything in our show notes for every single episode, including if by chance you're looking for a fantastic financial advisor, I happen to know one, and the link to that is also in our show notes as well. Max has been a fantastic guest. We do this every single Wednesday. Our quick hits are on Friday. As always, appreciate each and every one of you tuning in and listening, and we will catch you on the next episode. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, brought to you by Boldly Go. Hit that follow button so you don't miss out on new episodes. For deeper insights and to level up your travel game with our strategies, make sure to follow us on our social media platforms and sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop. Head over to www.boldlygo.world to learn more. As DeAndre is not operating through this podcast as a fiduciary and/or financial advisor, this should not be considered personal financial advice. The information covered and posted has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The strategies and results referenced on this site, while proven, are not guaranteed. While most who apply the principles referenced will achieve similar results, you may not yourself. Your results will vary and depend on many factors that may be in or out of your control, but include factors such as your credit score, financial status, business experience, etc. It is your responsibility to consume and implement these recommendations at your own risk. We cannot be held responsible for any failure to do so.
Hi, I'm Mike Siegel, and man, oh man, do I love talking about travel. You think I'd get enough of it, touring the world as a stand-up comedian, or just going off on my own personal adventures around the world? No, when I get home, I still have to talk about it. That's how much I love travel. So every week I sit down with a friend, a travel expert, influencer, expat, or anyone from any walk of life who shares my passion for travel. So if you want to hear a fun, casual, off-the-cuff chat about travel from people who love it, listen to the Travel Tales podcast with me, Mike Siegel, wherever you get your podcasts.
Quick question. Do you want travel tips from people who have actually been there?
Our show is co-hosted by Tim Johnson, an award-winning travel journalist who's been to more than 145 countries around the world. And I'm David Brody, the other co-host who's been travel podcasting for 20 years while traveling to 50-plus countries around the world.
In about 10 or 20 minutes per show, we break down a destination with the kind of insight you usually only get from long guidebooks or hours of research.
So if you want expert advice, zero fluff, and travel inspiration that you can actually use, search for Travel in 10 wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can also find us at boyescape.com.